This is Clark Peterson, and you're listening to Pro Lacrosse Talk.
Right off the bat, there's Lyle Thompson. Courier,
Kylie Elmiller showing off those shifty skills.
Driver driving hard down the alley, and he scores.
What a goal from Josh Bird.
Kayla Trainer
flips and scores.
You kidding me?
By Dylan Ward.
Gets topside. Rambo scores.
Welcome to Pro Lacrosse Talk, your go-to podcast for interviews with professional players, coaches, and executives, as well as the latest news and analysis from all three professional lacrosse leagues. Now, here's your host, Hutton Jackson.
What's up, Pro Lacrosse fans? Welcome to another edition of Pro Lacrosse Talk presented by Fanatics. Reminder to visit prolacrossetalk.com/NLL shop or prolacrossetalk.com/NLL shop-CA for our Canadian fans. For your official NLL team gear, I'm your host, Hutton Jackson. Today, I'm joined by PLT contributor Sam Long. Sam, thank you for joining me today. Great to have you on the podcast for the first time. You've been doing a lot behind the scenes for us. You've joined our Twitter spaces a few times as well, but now you're making your Pro Lacrosse Talk podcast debut. How's it going today, and what did you think of this PLL news that we're going to start off with?
Thanks for having me on the podcast. I love talking lacrosse, and I'm doing pretty well, and I'm doing a lot better now that I found out that the PLL is doing, free agency. Since they started, that was something me and my buddies always talked about of like, I wish that there was more of a player aspect, like where they wanted to play. Especially because like, if you were a player in the league and you didn't want to be on your team, your only options were basically be cut or be traded. At least now, you can kind of let your contract expire and then go maybe sign with the team you actually want to play for. So I think it'll be, really good for the sport and really good for, I think, creating a little more interest in the offseason. I think that's one thing that PLL kind of, they try to do a good job with, but free agency really, I think, will boost their offseason engagement.
No, I agree. And we'll have to wait till 2023, unfortunately, for free agency, but it is coming. They're going to have a restructuring period coming up. But some other news accompanying this is that the coaches that act as the GMs on their teams are now going to have a certain salary allotment. They're going to have a cap of $735,000 that they're going to have to allocate, and they're going to have to allocate at least 98% of that. So that's essentially the cap, and then the floor is $720,300. So nice to see that there's kind of now a salary cap and floor. That's going to, definitely maintain parity in the league. I think the parity in the league's been pretty good so far, but that's going to kind of, reinforce that, where teams aren't going to just be able to be stacked. These coaches are going to have a little bit more decisions to make based on salaries and stuff. And the fact that they're going to be the one restructuring it, creates a little bit more of an interesting dynamic. So this is a report from Inside Lacrosse. January 18th to 23rd, there'll be the off-season roster movement window, which will allow coaches to trade and release players prior to the start of the player signing window, which starts on January 24th and goes until April 1st. So that signing window will allow coaches then to allocate their compensation for their full 25-man roster. So should see some interesting moves. Even though there isn't going to be a free agency period, you might see some players released and then picked up by other teams based on, salary constraints. So that's going to be something that's interesting. And you might see some trades also made based on salaries and stuff. So the whole thing's going to be interesting. We still don't know if we're going to actually, know publicly players' salaries, but we got a little bit more details on the number figures. Especially in terms of college draft picks, the top four picks will receive in this order, $30,000, $28,500, $27,000, and then $26,000 as their base salary to start. And then every draft pick after that will have a base salary of $25,000, which no other player will make less than $25,000. That's going to be the bare minimum salary, which is, leaps and bounds above what it was at the MLL. So again, PLL pushing forward to make sure this is a professional league. Those aren't professional, type numbers that we have come to know in other sports teams, which, is something as lacrosse fans, we're gonna have to get used to a little bit. It wasn't public information, but a lot of people knew that these players weren't paid well. Now that we kind of have dollar figures associated to it, hopefully those figures will start to go up, but that's the reality of where our sport currently is right now. But any other thoughts on this news? And do you have any players that, even though there's no free agency period this year, that you're kind of hoping to see in free agency, or maybe see, released from their teams and go to another team this offseason?
Yeah, I'm, as a diehard Archers fan, I'm really excited for, obviously I was really excited when they picked up Graham Hossack because he's an absolute monster. What I'd like to see, and this is going to be an issue, is like face-off guys mainly, because that's, I think, the Archers' biggest issue. but there's not that many like really good faceoff guys. You've got like Joe Nardella, who consistently is like really good. TD Ireland this past year was really good. We'll see if he can continue that success in year two. And then Trevor Baptiste, really good. Outside of those three, kind of the rest of the guys are like, you know, they'll get you around 50%, but like those are the top three. So I think it'll be really interesting how the faceoff position shapes out most of all. I honestly don't want it to become like in the NFL where there's like a kicker, just carousel, but I think you could see that where, you know, you've got a guy that's, you know, he's not getting the job done. And there's a free agent that can, you think do at least as good and maybe better. So you just drop and sign the next one. So that's the thing I'm kind of most interested to see is how kind of these specialist positions shake out with free agency.
No, I think that's a good point. You know, in the three teams you mentioned, you know, obviously have solid faceoff guys. TD was worth his weight in gold as that top draft pick for the Redwoods. You know, Max Adler kind of came into his own as well. So I think, you know, those four teams, Chaos, Redwoods, Atlas, and Whipsnakes are pretty set. But the other four, yeah, I think, you know, you might see a carousel. You kind of saw it a little bit already with the Cannons, you know, picking up some guys in the expansion draft. And then, you know, didn't really work out, didn't pan out. So I think they're going to kind of look to the draft. I think you saw, like you said, the Archers really, it hurt them, you know, and I'm sure they were in on probably some other faceoff guys, you know, maybe like Gallagher or whatever early on and, you know, didn't really follow them. And Gaffney, you know, showed a little bit of glimmer, you know, when he was able to play, but yeah, that's definitely going to be an interesting thing going forward. I agree 100% with that, you know. And what does the Chrome do with Connor Farrell? You know, he had a down year, but he's obviously shown that he can still perform at this in this league. So, you know, does another team take a chance on him? A lot to kind of figure out. And again, you know, I'm more excited less for the contract values, but knowing the years, I think, you know, we did get to see some players re-sign with the league and they announced like how many years they were, but now I think that's going to be more public and that's going to be interesting. You know, someone's in a contract year. You know, what are they going to do next season? I think that's going to be what I'm looking forward to most going forward, you know, now that there is kind of going to be free agency, and free agency is going to be great and kind of necessary now that expansion's kind of slowed down a little bit. So doesn't sound like they're going to add any more expansion teams. I think that's a good, you know, thing to do right now is just kind of wait a little bit. I think eight teams is pretty set. I would love to see more teams definitely in the future. You know, don't get me wrong there, but I think, you know, wait maybe a year or two before you add some more teams. I think the parity in the league's good where it's at right now. So adding that free agency period, it's definitely going to help with the parity of the league because expansion kind of filled that void for a time being, you know, in the first couple of years of the league. Now, if you're not going to have expansion drafts, teams are going to stay relatively the same. And how do you kind of, you know, break up the whip snakes or, you know, kind of allow some bottom teams to kind of be competitive? That's the way you do it. That in the draft, of course. But yeah, I think this is great news for the sport going forward. Kind of puts it, you know, back on the same level as the NLL, which does has a free agency period, operates a lot like a professional league. We don't know the dollar figures necessarily for the NLL. A lot of it's, you know, unsaid. I think this is a good move for professional field lacrosse. We also have the PLL top 50 that's going on right now. Me and you had a few people that have already been revealed that we would have probably put in our top 10, but who's in your top 10 if you were doing it?
Well, so my top 10, you know, I took a look at yours and I was like, okay, you know, not bad. And then I looked, at some of the, basically like the percentages of like, for example, like I've got, Zed Williams, 23.5%. That's how many goals he scored of his total teams. And Zed was hurt for a couple of games this past year. So I thought that really stood out to me that he, you know, was really impressive with that. Jeff Teat, the fact that he didn't play until like week three or four, like he had a couple of games behind and still almost passed Grant Amen for most points in the league. So I was fine with him sitting at two. And then I put Lyle Thompson at three. Cause he had some really, really strong games this past year. And then he also had like 20% of the Cannons goals. Tom Schreiber, I know Tom Schreiber is like one of the best players in the world. So I was really shocked to see that, you know, he only scored 11% of his team's goals. And it's not even like he had a down year. Like he had a pretty good year. He had like 30 points. I mean, that's a pretty good year. I think it's just the fact that the Archers have so much firepower on offense that they don't initially need Schreiber.
Yeah.
They don't need him to, you know, run in there and, you know, score five a game. you know, so I put him, I still put him at four, even though maybe his stats don't indicate that he's like, I still think he's that caliber of a player. Blaze Reardon, I threw in at five, best goalie in the league. You know, this past year, the only thing I dinged him on is the fact that he let in the most 2 points of any other goalie in the league, which kind of shocked me, but, you know, I was like, eh. So I put him at five, still obviously a fantastic player. And then another chaos teammate, Josh Burns at six. Graham Hossack at seven. He had almost 20% of the Archers cause turnovers, which I think is a crazy stat. Matt Rambo was hurt a lot last year, but, you know, still think he's one of the best players in the league. Costabile at nine. When I looked at Costabile, I was a little disappointed with how I think little he assisted. And I was at the semifinals in Philly this past season. And, you know, I went with a couple of my teammates and like we were watching Costabile just kind of run and take a bunch of shots. And we're like, ah, dude, like you got Jeff Teat, like relax, man, like run the offense. So that, you know, I put him at nine. I think he has the potential to be, I think, a Schreiberian player where he's like, you know, he can do it all because he can play defense really well too. So yeah, maybe he, you know, with a couple of years of development, he can hop into that like Zach Currier, Tom Schreiber kind of do it all, you know, type of midfielder. And then Michael Earhart at 10. You know, he didn't have, I don't think he didn't have a great year. He had like 7 points, which I think is a little low for him. I think the past couple of years, he's been like the 15 ish mark. And he only had 6 cause turnovers, which wasn't even good for like top five on his team. But I would assume he'll bounce back next year. I mean, he's a world-class player, you know?
Yeah, no. And I had a similar list, to you, you know, two guys you mentioned, Brian Costabile and Josh Byrne. Were guys that, you know, I really kind of wanted to put in my top 10. Josh Byrne is in my top 10, and I was really shocked that he didn't find himself in the top 10. He ended up landing at 11 on the list, so really close to the top 10, but I would put him up there, me personally. So I had a similar list than you. I can't imagine, though, a world where Blaze Reardon doesn't go number one this year. Now, and that's not me saying necessarily that, you know, he's number one, maybe over Lyle Thompson, Tom Schreiber all time or whatever. Cause I still consider those two guys, you know, top in the game and along with Jeff Teat. But what he did this season, he's gotta be number one in my book. So I had Blaze Reardon, Jeff Teat, Lyle Thompson, Tom Schreiber, Josh Byrne, Graham Hossack, Michael Earhart, Zach Currier, Matt Rambo, and Zed Williams. So Rambo and Zed Williams, I moved down a little bit lower, you know, again, just because they did have some injuries that kind of kept them out. Doesn't mean they're still not top players, but that's kind of where I have my list. Brian Costabile just barely missed as well. You know, him and Grant Amon were, I was trying to toy them in there, but I couldn't put them over any of those other guys that I had in there. So again, way things have shaked out, Costabile and Byrne are out of the top 10. So it seems like we're going to get a top 10 in no particular order. Blaze Reardon, Jeff Teat, Lyle Thompson, Tom Schreiber, Graham Hossack, Matt Rambo, Zed Williams, Michael Earhart, Zach Currier, and Grant Amon. How that shapes out, we'll be able to debate next episode and see, but those are who it seems like are going to be making in the top 10 based on who's been revealed. That kind of brings us to some snubs. Again, I honestly don't have that many problems with this list. You know, you can, you know, move people up and down a little bit. There's a few people that I think are criminally, you know, ranked too low, but in terms of people that didn't make this list, I don't know if I would really leave anyone off this list. I think maybe Ratliff would be a guy I would drop if I want to get a guy in. You know, you look at Jackson Morrill and Jake Caraway as two rookies that had, you know, great performances this year. Morrill was 18th in points. Caraway was 23rd. So I would have liked to see them maybe get on this list, but this list isn't always a perfect indication of how this whole season goes. You kind of still base it off of, you know, past performances. So I'm kind of fine with them not being on the list. And then I was surprised that Eddie Glazner and Cade Van Raphorst weren't on. I would probably put Glazner or Raphorst in Ratliff's spot. Cause I feel like both those guys, you know, Raphorst was top five in cause turnovers, and also led high in ground balls as a close defender. So, you know, I like one of those guys to get in instead of Ratliff. Other than that though, you know, not too many complaints from me, but any complaints from you in terms of people that snubbed or people that you think are criminally too low on this list?
Yeah. That's kind of the difficult thing about a top 50, list for the PLL is that you have, You're trying to balance between, okay, what did the player do this year? What have they done in the past? Do I think that they're going to rebound? You know, like Tom Schreiber is a good example of that. But then there's Liam Burns, who's sitting there at 27. and he led the league and caused turnovers.
Crazy.
I didn't understand that. I think that a lot of the close defenders are criminally underrated. I think that a lot of the guys on the list, you kind of see it's like, oh, they do a bunch of like flashy things. Like Trevor Baptiste is like 12. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, yeah, he wins a bunch of faceoffs. That's like, that's flashy. You can throw that stat up there. It's like, oh, he's like 80% in the game, you know, things like that. As a D mid in college, you know, I understand it's not the flashiest position. It's, you know, defense is not a, it's not where the glory is. And I think that's pretty heavily reflected in the top 50, because you got like Garrett Upples in like number 29. He's like high 20s, I believe. Mm-hmm. You know, so you just have these guys that like can manhandle
25.
You guys that can just absolutely manhandle like people like Matt Rambo, and they're like, oh yeah, you're 25.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you on Burns. I was shocked that he was that low, 27. You know, I toyed with him in my top 10, to be honest. Couldn't do it, you know, but like I felt bad like leaving him out of my top 10, because I was like, I'm leaning very awesome offensive heavy, you know, as an attackman myself, you know, kind of, you know, biases are towards the offense. But yeah, I mean, he top caused turnovers in the league when they moved him down to close, like that, pretty much reinvented that defense, and they played so much better. And he's been in that position, you know, if you want to go off of a career, he's been in that position, you know, previously in the MLL, you know, leading cause turnovers. So very, very shocked that he was that low. That was probably the one that I really had a huge, you know, problem with. Other than that, you know, not too many complaints really from me, in terms of this list. You know, there's a few guys. I think Rylan Reese is another guy that, you know, Water Dogs poll, I would have probably moved up a little bit. And I did like to see Ben Randall on this list, because I've been preaching that he's criminally underrated for a while. I was shocked that the Water Dogs were able to land him and Burns. They, like, before Hasek was in the mix, those were my two top defenders going into this entry draft. And then when Hasek came into the mix, you know, he obviously moved to number one for me, but I was shocked that the Water Dogs were able to land both those guys. So I liked seeing Randall on that list. Sounds like the players give him a lot more respect than maybe the fans do. And he's a quiet player, so it's understood that, you know, maybe he doesn't get the glamour as some of these other players. But yeah, overall this list, I didn't have much of a problem, and you know, it's hard to argue with the players at the end of the day. But those were a few things, a few players too that I hope can maybe bounce back and maybe, you know, land on this list. I mean, I think Jordan McIntosh, Connor Fields, and Chris Cloutier are all three that are kind of underrated. You know maybe could have found a spot on this list in some instances, but based on the teams that they're on, Cloutier definitely had a bigger role this year, but injuries kind of held him back a few games. Connor Fields, a lot of mouth to feeds on that Archers team, as we mentioned. So reason why, you know, he wasn't always in the spotlight. And Jordan McIntosh being on a Chrome team that was, you know, pretty disappointing most of the season, despite them meaning a lot to their team. So other than that, you know, hopefully Gutterding and Burnlore can bounce back. Those are two that, you know, were kind of staples last year that fell off, and for, you know, valid reasons. Gutterding didn't play in a few games, didn't have a great season, then got traded to the Whipsnakes and kind of, you know, found his own a little bit, but you know, that was only for a handful of games. And then Burnlore obviously had probably his worst season as a professional, unfortunately, but they're expecting him to, you know, get back to form. So those are two guys that don't necessarily, I think, deserve to be on this list, but you could see bounce back and get on this list going forward. Any other thoughts, parting thoughts on this top 50?
Yeah, I know I've got a note in there about kind of like the parity of talent. So you have, you know, the top 50. I mean, there's feasibly, you know, you got like 18, 20 man rosters, eight teams. So you're looking at about 150 players, and then you're ranking a third of them, you know? So I feel like it's, you know, kind of, you got to walk a fine line between ranking too many players and ranking not enough. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, like in basketball, people debate, you know, like their top three, and there's been players since the 50s that you can argue that can be in that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that it's really hard to sit there and like rank a third of your players, but you know, I love seeing the outcome, because it's always fun to debate what the players think about everybody.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think that's, you know, the consensus of what the top 10 is, isn't, you know, it doesn't bother me too much, but seeing, you know, where everyone ranks is going to be, I'm telling you, I'm rioting if Blaze Reardon is the number one. You know, I'm sorry. I think given his season, he needs to be, you know, we'll see what the players think. So that wraps up our PLL discussion. We're going to break down some of these NLL games as well. But before we do that, we were joined by Clark Peterson. I got to talk to him about his 7-point game against The Rock. So let's hear from our interview with Clark Peterson. Today on Pro Lacrosse Talk, we are lucky to have Halifax Thunderbirds forward Clark Peterson joining the show following his 7-point performance against The Rock that saw him register 6 goals.
Clark, thanks for joining me. What's it like getting back on the floor with this Thunderbirds team?
Yeah, and it's been really good. It's really been really good to connect with the guys again, especially off, you know, such a long period, and you know, staying in touch with them, texting and whatever, and messaging. But being back, you know, with the team as a group in the locker room, plane rides, bus rides, whatever it may be, it has been really awesome. And something that I think myself and a lot of people have been missing is that that personal kind of connection. So one thing that I really, you know, love about our team, and I think is what makes us such a good team, is how close we are and how tight knit we are. So that connection of kind of getting everybody back together has been awesome. And I've been really enjoying it. And, you know, so far it's been shown on the floor as well. So it's been a good start to the season for us.
Yeah, no, we'll talk about your guys' 2-0 start, but I want to go back a little bit before, you know, your big night and talk about your time at Cornell. At Cornell, you finished in the top 10 for career goals and points and were a 3-time captain for the Big Red as well. Talk about what it was like playing at Cornell and how did that really shape you as a player?
Yeah, I think going to Cornell was like one of the best decisions that I've ever made. Right now I work at the Hill Academy and, you know, guiding, you know, the high school that I went to and guiding kind of students to, you know, get to the next level and things like that. Like something that I always tell them is like, this is one of the biggest decisions that you're going to kind of make in your life, right? Where you're going to go to university for, you know, spend the next 4 years of your life, some really formative years. So for me, Cornell was the best decision I've ever made and has had probably one of the biggest impacts on my life, lacrosse, you know, personal, all that kind of stuff. Right. So it was amazing. It was an amazing experience and, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world. I made my best friends there, ton of amazing experiences on and off the field, you know, experienced some success, you know, as a team and personal as well. But really the biggest thing is just like the culture of, you know, Cornell lacrosse, Cornell University. And I think it's something that's super unique and, you know, it's hard to kind of describe in words, but just being in that culture really kind of shaped me as a person and as a player, something that I'm super grateful for, but you know, I loved every second of it.
No, for sure. It's definitely one of the most historic programs in college lacrosse. And then on the flip side, you're a member of the Brampton Excelsiors. You recorded 387 points during those 5 seasons there. How did your time with Brampton kind of help you both in the box game and prepare you for the next level?
Yeah, I think that one kind of consistent thing there or theme there would be, you know, Jeff Teat, my, you know, one of my best friends, right? Mm-hmm. Played with him at the Hill, at Cornell and in Brampton as well. So we spent a lot of time together on the floor, off the floor, developing a, you know, a relationship and a chemistry. So really, you know, playing with him at both those kind of stages really just helped me kind of develop myself, right? We, you know, we developed a really good chemistry with each other, learned to play off each other, you know, kind of have that righty lefty dynamic where we're always keeping our head up and our eyes up for each other. And that, you know, I like to say, like, when you're playing with Jeff, like, it's really easy. Like, you just kind of do the simple things and, you know, you'll either, he'll find you and you'll have a nice little tap in or, you know, he'll magically kind of be open off ball. But that's one thing that really helped me and my game is having, being able to play with a guy like him, making, you know, some deep runs in the playoffs, our one Minto run in our last year there. Learned a lot from those experiences as well. You know, didn't win, unfortunately, but, you know, for me, you're either winning or you're learning. So, you know, just learning a bunch from being able to play with guys like Jeff and, you know, Tyson Gibson and you know, the loaded roster that we had in Brampton for all 5 of my years and, you know, in some big games and learning through experiences that way as well.
No, I like that. If you're not winning, you're learning. That's a good quote that I'm going to definitely steal.
Yeah.
And you mentioned those two guys, Tyson and Jeff. You're getting to play them January 8th when the Thunderbirds take on the Riptide. Are you guys have any, you know, talk going right now? You know, hopefully Jeff is good to go after, you know, land on the COVID list. But you guys trash talking a little bit. You got that one circled on your calendar?
No, I mean, for me, that's like a light year away, right? We've got the bye week coming up and then you got the Christmas break as well. So right now it's kind of like the mode that I feel like we're in as a team is just focusing on kind of getting healthy. We've had a little bit of an injury bug here to start the year. So getting healthy, a couple good weeks of practice here. And then, you know, focusing on Calgary and, you know, I work with Jeff every day at the Hill. So, you know, we do talk a little bit, not really, you know, chirping back and forth, but more of like watching film together, trying to dissect defenses and offenses and, you know, goalies and all that kind of stuff. Myself, Jeff Teaton, Riley O'Connor, kind of spending some time, a lot of time watching film after, you know, the day's kind of done. But, you know, not too much chirping. And especially, you know, for me, I feel like that game's a light year away. So just working on, focusing on having a good practice tomorrow and then, you know, trying to take care of Calgary in a couple of weeks here too.
Absolutely. It is next year. So, you know, you got some time. And going off of that, you know, talk about the feeling of getting drafted by the Thunderbirds organization in 2019. You're one of the last classes to get a live draft at Xfinity Live in Philadelphia. What was it like hearing your name called and then getting to stand up on that stage?
Yeah, that was awesome. You know, it was really cool being there with a lot of even guys that I grew up playing with, like Warren Jeffrey, Tanner Thompson, you know, some of my Mimico buddies there. And being in that in-person kind of draft was really special for me. My dad was there, you know, one of my best friends' dads, Riley Hutchcraft, his dad Brad was there. One of my biggest supporters was just out at our game against the Rock last weekend. Love seeing him. But the night is kind of like a blur where, you know, there's a bunch of things going on. You're extremely nervous, and then all of a sudden, you know, it happens, and you're feeling of elation, and, you know, this and that, and people are hugging you, and pictures and that, so it really is kind of flies by, but something that I'll definitely always remember, just because of how, you know, it's really a lifelong kind of dream and goal come true, right? Something that you, when you first pick up a stick, you know, you want to play in the NLL, you want to play, you know, under the lights Friday night, Saturday night, right? So seeing that kind of hard work that you put in all that time and preparation that you put in, kind of, you know, it's a small step, but but at the same time, it's a big step of, you know, you're not made it. You haven't made it once you get drafted, right? But it is a pretty cool thing and a unique experience where, you know, you get the opportunity to continue to play the game that you grew up playing and you love, and, you know, even make a living out of it too, which is really awesome.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I feel like you kind of made it in your first game as a rookie. You know, you had a hat trick in that game against the Rochester Nighthawks. So talk me through that, you know, opening day, your first game ever. Any pregame jitters in that game, or were you kind of just feeling it? And was it kind of any other game when you scored that hat trick?
Yeah, so I didn't play in our home opener. So really, it was kind of just a little bit of making sure that, you know, trying to get my feet under me, but also letting myself and, you know, teammates and everybody know, like, you know, this is where I belong. And, you know, this isn't kind of, you know, it's not a fluke or whatever, like, I'm ready. I've put in the work. So just kind of trusting myself and my abilities, as well as, you know, guys that I always talk about are the leaders of our offense. You know, back then it was Benny who we lost, but, you know, Jammer has always been an awesome guy for me to, you know, learn from and bounce ideas, questions off. He's always there for support, and Keo big time as well, being working on that right side with him. So, like, leaders like that really helped me kind of get settled in. And then it was just, you know, trusting my abilities and having some confidence in myself, and just going out there and making plays and not worrying about, you know, whatever happens, just, you know, don't try and force anything, play within your game. And, you know, the rest will take care of itself. As long as you're kind of putting in that full effort, the result really, you know, it doesn't matter, as long as you can look yourself in the mirror and say, yeah, I kind of gave it my all.
No, absolutely. And, you know, you had a great rookie season before it was cut short, 16 goals, 22 assists through 11 games. And now flash forward, you know, you guys are back on the floor. You're 2-0. You have that sock trick this past weekend. What was it like, you know, recording that? And were you just, you know, just feeling yourself that game?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I mean, it's not something that I would necessarily, like, kind of, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm at 4 goals, I'm at 5 goals. It's kind of just like, for me, and what I always kind of stress to, like, in the role that I'm at right now at the Hill, like coaching, you know, being able to kind of mold some younger minds, is just like the next play mentality. So whatever it is, good play or bad play, it's, you know, that happened, whatever, next play. So for me, it's like, okay, you know, I scored. Okay, I'm on the ball team. Okay, next play. Let's, you know, what can I do to make sure Wiz gets this face off here, or, you know, we can secure this possession and, you know, run our offensive set. So for me, it's kind of having that short memory. And like I kind of just said, playing your hardest every single shift, doing what you can to kind of contribute to the team. And some nights that's going to be scoring. Some nights it's going to be picking up loose balls and setting picks and doing some of the dirtier stuff that doesn't really get recognized on the stat sheet, but just focusing on that next play and not really worrying about where you're at in the game. Personally, it's like, you know, how can I contribute to the team? If that's, you know, if I get an open look, then boom, I have to hit that. And that's going to be my contribution. If I have to get back on defense, then that's my contribution. And that's the way our whole kind of team and offense plays, right? If, you know, Warren's got to make the big stops on breakaways and crease dives and this, like, that's what he does, right? If he's got to make an outlet pass, he'll do it. If we got to get back on defense, if we got to sprint to the bench to create a breakaway, that's kind of the way our team plays. So just doing what you can to kind of contribute to the win.
No, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up coaching, because I think that's probably an important part of kind of what shaped you in your career. Now you kind of get to give back to this next generation at the Hill Academy, where you went to school as well. Talk about coaching and getting into it. And do you see yourself, you know, you obviously have a, you know, a whole career ahead of you, but do you see yourself one day getting into coaching eventually?
Yeah, coaching for me has been a major part of kind of my development, right? So for me, it started with my uncles, my uncle Brian Huntley and Dave Huntley. They kind of taught me lacrosse from when I first picked up a stick. Brian, everybody calls him Tink. He kind of, you know, was the first person to kind of teach me lacrosse, coached myself in our 97 age group in Mimico, up until we were peewees, taught us all the fundamentals and the basics. And, you know, it's really kind of paid off. And, you know, I think it's why some couple of really strong 97s from Mimico, you know, seeing the NLL, myself, Warren Jeffrey, Jackson Subach, right, Riley Hutchcraft, working, being out there and playing in the NLL now, which is kind of cool to see from that small team. But coaches have been massive for me throughout my whole kind of career. And now having that ability to be a coach and give back, it's opened up a kind of a new perspective for me, where it's like, you know, I kind of know what to say to the kids and coach them up. Like, you need to do this in terms of X's and O's, or maybe if it's a little bit more of the intangibles of, you know, keep your head up, have good body language. And it's like, okay, I'm saying that to these kids, right? I've got to kind of do that myself. Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're in high school, they're going to be watching NLL games. I can't go out there and be palms up to the ref, or, you know, taking dumb penalties, or, you know, costing my team, and then come back to school on Monday and tell them, like, you can't be doing this, palms up to the refs, you can't be swearing, you can't be, right? So, you know, it's another kind of level of accountability, and open up that perspective of just, you know, trying to, if you're going to kind of say something, you got to stand by that as well, right? Your actions speak louder than your words. So, yeah, it's a level of accountability. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see as well.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's really rewarding to get to coach those guys. And like you said, it kind of, you know, makes you kind of coach yourself a little bit too. So I think that's pretty cool. We're going to move on now to our 5 and 5 segment. I'll ask 5 lacrosse questions and 5 off the floor questions. And the first one I have is, do you have any pregame superstitions or routines?
Not really. I think pregame shoot around, I like to kind of stay out after, get some extra reps in, work on some shots that I notice in film, or, you know, if a defense kind of is susceptible to a specific move or whatever, try and work on those. Like, do that pregame shoot around. Before the game, I have a little wall ball routine that I do to try and get my hands ready. And then some shots that I like to work on just to, you know, stay dialed in. But nothing really off the floor. I'm a big snack table guy. If you ask anybody on my team, I'm always hanging out by the snack table, getting Gatorade and whatever, blueberries, whatever. That's kind of my pregame routine.
Like it. And then number 2, what's been your favorite venue to play lacrosse at, whether that's field or indoor?
I'd have to go Halifax. Go with the Homer answer here, right? Yes. Playing in Halifax has been awesome. I felt like our first year, the fans just kind of kept coming out in droves, like more and more every game, which was really cool for them. Like, just kind of, you know, there'd be, you know, 8,000, 9,000, 10,000. We were kept pushing those numbers as the season kind of progressed. And that was kind of super cool. And the energy in that building is like, you can kind of feel it sometimes. And it really is an awesome place to play there in the nest.
Awesome. Yeah, it's been, you know, it's crazy how quickly that, you know, I guess the fans really came out for you guys. They must be really excited to have you guys there and definitely have you guys back after that long hiatus. Number three, what is your current stick setup in terms of head, shaft, and straight?
I use a torque head and a gate ice shaft currently. My boy Brett Dobson strings them up for me, goalie at St. Bonaventure there. He kind of gets them dialed in for me, but yeah, all gate.
Awesome. And then number four, who's a lacrosse player that you've looked up to when you were younger, who's been a mentor to you during your career?
Yeah, the lacrosse player that I most looked up to when I was younger is my cousin, Kevin Huntley, played at Hopkins. So like he was, you know, he's kind of like the reason why I wear 24. Someone actually recently asked me like, why do you wear 24? Like, it's because of junior. And I was like, well, actually it's because of my cousin, kind of Kevin Huntley. But I think he wore it because of junior. So maybe it's, you know, by a transitive property there or whatever, but, I looked up to my cousin big time. I wanted to go to Hopkins like desperately, you know, with him and my uncles both going there, but, yeah, he was a big kind of role model for me. Just, you know, playing at the highest level, winning national championships in the NCAA. So that's somebody who I kind of looked up to throughout my whole kind of lacrosse career.
Yeah, no, Kevin Huntley was one that I definitely followed too, you know, and I feel like he doesn't get talked about as much, you know, because obviously you have people during that era, Kyle Harrison as well, but he was a big part of those Hopkins teams that, you know, won national championships or, you know, got to the national championship a bunch of times.
Yeah,
so,
100%. Yeah, sure. Him and my uncle, I think first father-son duo at Hopkins, have 100 goals each or something along those lines. Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, it's crazy. And talk a little bit, you know, this is kind of, you know, 4A, 4B, but a little bit about Dave Huntley as well and, you know, what he meant to you, you know, as a family member, but also just his impact on pro lacrosse because he had a huge impact both on the box game, but also the field game as well professionally.
For sure. I think, yeah, you can kind of just skip over the impact that he had on me as a family member because of how massive his impact was as a kind of lacrosse icon, let's say, you know, Canada lacrosse icon, right? Really being a driving force for field lacrosse in Canada, you know, Canada lacrosse, you know, being kind of the, I don't even know what his role would be, but let's just say like the general of Canada lacrosse. And I don't think anybody in Canada lacrosse would get mad at me for saying that he kind of ran the ship for as long as he was out there, really pushing the men's field lacrosse game to a higher level. And what was the biggest thing for me was, you know, at his funeral, like, you know, you always kind of think about like the impact that you made in your life, you kind of get judged. You can kind of judge that by like who was at your funeral or like how many people. Right. And it was like, I've never seen that many people at a funeral, kind of packed the whole church and down the street. And it was really crazy. And I think just him giving back to the game so much is what kind of led to that. So, yeah, he was, you know, you can't overstate how much he did for lacrosse.
No, absolutely. And, you know, really spread it. Not only, you know, obviously, you know, its importance in Canada, but, you know, him taking over the Blaze team and kind of spreading it across the United States as well and some markets in the U.S. that weren't really known to lacrosse. So I think he, you know, obviously he's a staple and his presence is still being felt even after his time here. So definitely glad that we got to talk a little bit about that. My final one is a little bit more lighthearted, but if they made an NLL video game, who do you say deserves to be on the cover?
Cover of the video game. Cover of the NLL video game. I would say, you know, let's say it's the 2022 NLL video game or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whoever is kind of the leader of the team who wins the championship or whatever, right? So if it's us, it's probably Jammer. If it's, you know, Saskatchewan, maybe Mark. But, you know, I think you really got to put a lot of stock in whoever kind of leads their team to a championship. So, yeah, let's just go with Jammer.
All right, yeah, because you're hoping it's you guys. That's awesome.
There you go.
moving to the off-the-floor questions, who's a player in another sport that you enjoy watching right now?
Great question. I watch a lot of basketball. I think it translates a lot to lacrosse. I love watching Kawhi when he was on the Raptors. I think he did it at both ends of the floor, which is, you know, it's unusual, I'd say, for an NBA kind of superstar to kind of do it at both ends of the floor like that. So Kawhi, I really love, you know, kind of guys that operate in the pick and roll. So like Chris Paul, James Harden, I think is, you know, one of the most gifted offensive players, and like Kevin Durant as well. So maybe some of those guys, Paul, Harden, Durant, and Kawhi Leonard too, for sure.
Awesome. And then number two, what are some hobbies or activities you enjoy doing when you're not on the lacrosse field?
My life is like all lacrosse. So, you know, I coach lacrosse for like 3 hours in the morning, and then I kind of, you know, talk lacrosse with my team at the Hill throughout the day, do some individual meetings and stuff. After school, work out and watch film. So I like to eat and maybe go to some nice place to eat with my girlfriend. Some chocolate chip pancakes, that's my specialty, or that's my go-to. Yeah, maybe eat and travel, which are one thing that we haven't really been able to do a bunch, but now starting to, getting back in the NLL, I'll go to a bunch of different cities. It's really fun to do.
All right, well, that answer segues into two of my questions. So I'll start off with the food question. Since you already said chocolate chip pancakes, you kind of gave me half the answer, but do you prefer to dine out or take out?
That's a good, I think depends. Dinner, you got to dine out, but like breakfast, brunch, I'd like to just take that out and bring it home, put a movie on in the, you know, on a Sunday or whatever, lazy Sunday, but dinner, it's nice to kind of get out on the town a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned vacationing. Where's your favorite vacation spot?
Favorite vacation spot for me, maybe like the Bahamas. That's somewhere that I recently went. Anywhere with a beach and kind of warm ocean. I love the beach. I like to just post up in the sun and, you know, maybe with a good book and take a dip in the ocean every once in a while. But yeah, I'm a big beach guy.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I'm a big beach guy too. I actually currently live Jersey Shore area, so nice. Couldn't stay away from the beach, decided to live there. But Bahamas is interesting because me and my wife are actually talking about potentially going to the Bahamas or another, like, you know, tropical resort area. Yeah. So definitely going to look into that. My final one, and you mentioned watching movies as well as reading, but what's a book, TV show, or even like a podcast that you've been binging recently that you'd recommend to a friend?
Yeah, a book that I recently read is Grit by Angela Duckworth. I think that's like a awesome book for people who are trying to, you know, strive to reach the top of whatever, their game, their profession, whatever. That was a really cool read for me, and I'm actually probably going to start rereading that as well, just to kind of soak up a little bit more of that knowledge. But I'm not a big podcast guy. I don't know if I listen to too much. I like my music, so I just kind of love, you know, listening to music in the car and the plane rides, whatever. But a book that I kind of recently read is Grit, and it was awesome.
Yeah, no, I've never read that book, but I've heard her TED Talk, and that's been on my list to get around to eventually. So definitely a good one for sure. Final question, that wraps up the 5 and 5, but we always like to end on what is some advice you have for a young lacrosse player looking to one day play professionally?
I think you can never have your stick in your hand too much. Like if you talk to the greats, and being able to spend a little bit of time with John Grant Jr. recently, he was up at the Hill and coached me at the Team Canada Sixes there, right? He just talked about, you know, when we were just chit-chatting, how he always had a stick in his hand. He was always at the Mem Center playing. He said he'd play wall ball with like roller skates on, and he would buzz around the whole rink and with roller skates on. And I think if you ask around to about, you know, some guys who are kind of all-time greats, they always had a stick in their hand, right? So wall ball, extra shots, like cradling it when you're watching TV, having a tennis ball in your stick and cradling it, getting a feel for, you know, a lighter ball in there, soften your hands up. You can never have it in your hands too much. You can never, if this is something that you're really passionate about, and you know, you want to become a professional lacrosse player, you always kind of have that inner drive to want to do more. And if you have a hard workout and then a practice or whatever, and then you do a shooting session, and then you're like, okay, I'm gonna pack it up for the night, but you know, do a couple extra shots, right? Because like in the back of your head, well, maybe there's somebody who I'm competing against that for like a spot at the university or on the NLL roster or whatever down the road, like I'm going to get a couple more shots at him. Even like, that's just always kind of pushing yourself for a little bit more. You can never, you know, there's never too much, in my opinion, there.
No, I think that's some great advice for our young listeners and, you know, young players that are looking to one day aspire to be an NFL player as well. But we appreciate it, Clark. Thank you again for joining, and best of luck with you and the Thunderbirds, especially coming up against the Roughnecks.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
All right, so we appreciate Clark joining us. As I mentioned, he had 7 points in this game against the Rock, which I thought was going to be closer than it actually was, but he really popped off. Give me your thoughts on this game, Sam. I thought it was, you know, my game to watch, and it ended up not being as close as I thought it would be. But what are your thoughts on this Thunderbirds team?
Yeah, I mean, Clark Peterson went off on Toronto. And, I mean, something that people maybe kind of don't notice as much is that Schreiber had his, like, 100th career goal in that game.
Yep.
So, you know, great achievement for him. And Chris Bucci, 3 goals, 4 assists for the Thunderbirds. Like, it was mainly those two that were, like, contributing on offense. But, you know, they exploded against the Rock. And, you know, it was good to see that their defense and Warren Hill specifically just completely, like, stifled anything the Rock were trying to get going. Now, they did suffer an injury on offense, and I'm so that's, you know, I still think obviously the Thunderbirds are a really good team, but I mean, that, you know, you can only take so many hits to your offense, and that's a pretty big piece right there.
It's a shame that they, you know, especially picking him up, I mean, he kind of sat in free agency for a while, and it sounds like he's going to be out for the season, potentially, you know, maybe able to come back late playoff run. But yeah, that's tough for Reese Dutch, you know, obviously a staple of that Calgary Roughnecks team, won them that championship in overtime, you know, when we last had a champion, and it was nice to see him land on a Thunderbirds team that can contend. But it sounds like he has a knee injury that is going to keep him out. He's on the IR list now. The good news is, you know, hopefully they're getting Jammer back, Cody Jamison, hopefully. The only reason that Dutch was able to play was because Jammer was a scratch these first two games. So, you know, you look at that, hopefully it's not as big of a loss because, you know, you have Jamison coming in, but at the end of the day, you know, you can't really replicate not only Reese Dutch's, you know, offensive performances, but also just his ability to be clutch in the most clutch moments of the game. So they're going to miss his veteran leadership. Hopefully he has a, you know, speedy recovery, but yeah, that was an unfortunate injury for, you know, a team that's now 2-0 and looking like the cream of the crop. Definitely hurts to have another offensive guy go down.
Yeah, absolutely. And with, you know, with the Rock, I mean, the Rock are still a good team. I think that even though they kind of got whipped a little bit by the Thunderbirds, I mean, you toss your hat to and your sock to Clark Peterson and, you know, and then, you know, move on to the next one. I mean, they're still, they're 1-1. I mean, they're still like, it's very early in the season. They still can easily bounce back. Everything they want to achieve is in front of them. So I'm, of the two teams, I'm actually more worried about the Thunderbirds. You know, hopefully Jamison can come in and like give them the basically the same boost that Dutch was giving them. But that's why I'm a little more concerned about the Thunderbirds and the Rock from this game.
Yeah, no, I think they'll be fine. Just given, you know, the depth that they have, it is unfortunate again, like to lose a piece like Dutch. And again, we're assuming that Jamison is going to come back, but we thought he was going to be back for this game as well, and he wasn't. So hopefully he is, but yeah, I'd probably differ with you. I'm not too worried about Thunderbirds, but I'm also not too worried about the Rock as well. I think it's a battle between two good teams, and Thunderbirds came out on top, but I think it's going to be more interesting to see, you know, and I don't want to spoil my matchup of the week, but the Rock taking on the Wings, and see, I think that's going to be a bigger test for both the Wings, and kind of we can see the Rock's true colors in that game as well. But since I alluded to the Wings, let's talk about the Wings versus the Riptide on Friday night. This is another game, you know, that going into it, I thought, okay, this is going to be a good, you know, show of, you know, kind of who the Wings are. Cause I thought against Panther City, we expected them to be a little bit more dominant than they have been in these first two games. Unfortunately, Jeff Teat was out on the COVID list. He missed both the Riptides game this weekend. So a bad scenario for them, unfortunately. Would they have won, you know, had he been on the team? You know, I think they would have had a better shot. They played this Wings team tough. And you know, he was 7 points of production in that first game. So hard to say, but this Wings team still has problems, you know, letting teams hang around. I still think they're the superior team to this Riptide, but they were unfortunately, you know, let them hang around, never relinquished the lead after going up 2-1 after, you know, trailing 1-0 early on. But I don't know. I'm still not sold on the Wings. That's why, you know, I've got to see more against them, against the Rock. But some bright spots for the Wings were Corey Small had a massive day. You know, he had 8 points in this game. He had 5 goals. He's been a great revelation for them. They got him from the Bandits in the offseason. Kevin Crowley, who was quiet in their first game, made up for it. 4 goals and 5 assists. So the captain was feeling himself, big cat. And then Matt Randall,
top 10.
Yeah, he was on SportsCenter top 10 as well in that BTV goal. So a lot of top 10s moments for NLL, which had been great so far. Yeah. I think we've had 3 or 4 so far in just 2 weeks. So that's been great. And then Zach Higgins played well too. So overall, I'm not too worried about this Wings team. I'm just not ready to put them in the contender status just yet, despite being at 2-0. But, you know, again, give credit to the Riptide. They hung around. Callum Crawford still appears to be a thorn in the Wings side, no matter what team he's on. He kind of led that comeback. But what were your thoughts on the Riptide's offense, despite the absence of Jeff Teat?
Yeah, I mean, they I know for the first week when we were on the Twitter space, and you know, we kind of discussed, like, how is this Riptide team really going to shake out? Mm-hmm. Offensively, they're fine. I mean, they've got Callum Crawford, who's first in the league in points, and then Kieran McArdle doing his best work with second in the league in points, you know, and then they'll get Jeff Teat back. I mean, that is a really potent offense right there. Mm-hmm. You know, defensively, they got to shore up a little bit. I mean, to the Wings' credit, they're an absolute wagon on offense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that the Riptide, I'm not going to call them contenders, but I think they're going to be a little bit better as they get Jeff Teat back and kind of everyone starts to mesh a little bit. I think down the stretch, you know, they may not make the playoffs, but I think they could feasibly, like, pull off some pretty nasty upsets and play a little spoiler down the end.
I think, you know, the 0-3 starts disappointing, but I definitely think they'll rattle off more than one win than they did, you know, in previous seasons as well. Again, my biggest question, you mentioned the defense, but to me too, it's like goaltending. You know, is Abrams or Orleman going to be the guy? You know, like, they both looked all right in their, you know, games, but it wasn't enough to kind of give me too much confidence in this team. You know, like you said, like, I think they're not going to be bad, but, you know, I still don't think they're above 500 team in this league. You know, it'll depend. You know, Jeff Teat can go off. He can do wonders. We saw what he did with this Atlas team. I don't know, you know, I still need to see a little bit more. And unfortunately, you know, we're not going to go too much into the Georgia Swarm game, but, you know, they ended up getting a second loss in the weekend on Sunday at the hands of Lyle Thompson, who had 10 points for the sixth time in his career. So Lyle doing Lyle things. He was Lyled in on this weekend, but tough losses for both of the Riptide, both on Friday and Sunday, and they're already in an 0-3 hole, which you know, it's not a good sign. Long season, 18 games, so there's still plenty of lacrosse, but it is very, very disappointing for them. I thought they were going to do a little bit more too, and again, absence of Jeff Teat is a big asterisk on these last two losses, but credit to them for hanging around on this Wings team. I don't know, I felt like this game said more about the Wings, unfortunately, than it did about the Riptide, and I still think the Wings need to clean up transition a little bit more. That's kind of what led to this comeback, so, you know, we'll see kind of how they do. Let's move on to the Mammoth Seals. It was the ESPN debut game. Our friends Brendan Glasheen and Mitch Bilal had the call in NLL's debut, and Shiliano had a day. He held the Mammoth with just 4 goals. It was only the 24th time in regular season that a goalie had allowed 4 or fewer goals. As rare as it was, though, 4 different goalies did it in 2020 in the shortened season. So are we seeing, you know, better defense, you know, in this league as more teams get added, maybe, you know, less offensive production, who knows? But he made 33 saves in this game. And, you know, unfortunately, I was high on the Seals going into the season. Kind of felt a little, you know, disappointed in their showing against the Warriors. So kind of reversed, you know, course picking against them in this game. And it probably shouldn't, because this was the Seals team that I was expecting to see going into the season. But what were your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, well, I do know that I was like the only one that picked the Seals in this game.
You were.
And I was watching it.
Brag, gloat, you deserve it. You picked them.
Yep. I was watching it with my buddy Alex, who he's taught me a lot about box because he plays for the Team Finland national team. So he's taught me a lot about kind of the offenses work. I mean, just because coming from Florida, box doesn't exist. So watching the Seals on their first game in week 1, you know, given what, you know, Alex had fed me, I was like, okay, this doesn't seem right. He's like, yeah, no, they're playing like terribly right now. So, okay, fair enough. And then especially just Dane Doby looked not very good in that first game against the Warriors. And so, you know, I definitely took a little bit of a gamble. I was like, okay, I think that the Warriors are a decent team. I think the Seals did not play even close to their potential. Colorado coming off a blowout win against the Georgia Swarm, who are young on defense. Like, I think I like the Seals to bounce back here. Mm-hmm. And they did. I mean, it was incredible. They were clicking in all phases of the game. And I think that, you know, they may not be undefeated, but they're a dangerous team.
I know. I kind of wanted to have this discussion because I feel like they are, you know, still a contender that I thought they were kind of going into. Knee jerk reaction to that first game, which I shouldn't have, because they only lost by one to the Warriors, or two, I believe, I forget. But, you know, Buque played really, really well. And, you know, overall, like, this offense is still lethal. Mack O'Keefe and Trey LeClair, like, you would kill just to have one of those rookies. And Dane Doby, you mentioned, was as MVP form, you know, maybe took him, a game to kind of get back to that. But he had 3 goals and an assist and 2 highlight goals. One landed him on top SportsCenter's top 10 as well. And overall, I think Jeremy Noble was the missing piece in that first game. He was out and he ended up having 6 goals. And he ended up having 6 points in this game, as well as another Denver University product, Westberg, who had 5. So Jeremy Noble, I think, kind of having him back kind of led to a little bit more comfortability for this offense. And overall, this team looked really dominant. And, you know, they didn't dominate the Mammoth in that first quarter necessarily either. Mammoth looked like they were going to, you know, have a good offensive day. And Chiliano just came out and really, really crushed it in those last 3 quarters. So making some point blank saves, give credit to the defense as well for the Seals. But on the flip side, you know, if you're the Mammoth, you got to figure out how to replicate that first quarter and toss those other 3 quarters aside, because an offense with Connor Robinson, Tyler Digby, Zed Williams, Ryan Lee, Chris Wardle, Eli McLaughlin, list goes on, like, should not be only putting up 4 points in this league. So, and one of their goals was called off because Chris Wardle stepped in the crease. So, you know, they could have potentially had 5, but still, this offense is too good to, you know, not play that well. And I thought Dylan Ward played all right. You know, he didn't play bad by any stretch of the imagination. Not having Dan Coates, you know, is kind of starting to rear its head a little bit for the Mammoth. You know, had a good opening game against the Swarm, but I think this was a, you know, like you said, a more truer test for the Mammoth. So still not sure about the Mammoth. I don't know how I feel about them after this game. You know, I don't think they're a bad team, but I just need to see a little bit more from them before I'm, you know, going to either place any money or really, you know, crown them as a contender. But the Seals, yeah, I agree. They look great. They really did.
Yeah. I mean, my takeaway from this game is, like, you know, the parity in the league, like, you know, it's really tight. I mean, you've seen the Riptide, where 1 win team 2 years ago now are competing with decent teams, but, like, mm-hmm. someone has to be the bad team. Like, mm-hmm. someone has to suck. And I'm not saying it's the Mammoth, but I would say I'm probably going to not necessarily put the Mammoth in of like a bad tier, but, like, I would peg the Mammoth as like a mid tier team. I don't like to put a lot of weight on that week 1 performance for any of these teams. I mean, because they took 2 years off. Mm-hmm. But, you know, looking at what I saw from the Mammoth in this game, it's like, okay, their offense can struggle, you know, because that, you know, to your credit, yeah, they've got a ton of weapons, but now we've seen that those weapons may not always cash in. And we saw that with the Seals, you know, like in week 1. And then with Vancouver, you know, we've seen they beat the Seals and they turn around and run up the score on Panther City. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you gotta, who's gonna be the bad team? And I mean, the Mammoth, maybe Calgary, maybe, you know. Yeah.
Calgary had a big win too. It's tough. Yeah. I think, like you said, it's early on. This West is wide open to me, whereas the East kind of has a little bit more tiers, you know. Like, Rochester, we think is going to be better. New York's going to be better, but are they really going to be, you know, contending for those top spots? Probably not. You know, I think it's still, the East is a little bit more set, but yeah, the West, I agree. It's a little bit more wide open, you know, and is it going to be, you know, maybe one of these mid-tier teams is going to end up being the odd team out, but yeah, it's tough to say right now. And you mentioned Vancouver, they're one of 4 teams that's 2-0. So of these 2-0 teams that are undefeated, who's your kind of, your top team right now? You know, obviously we think the Seals are kind of up there, but they're 1-1, but you have the Thunderbirds are 2-0, Wings are 2-0, Warriors are 2-0, and the Bandits are 2-0. Who's kind of your top 2-0 team right now?
Yeah, so of the top or of the four 2-0 teams, I like the Warriors, but you know, their wins were against Panther City, who I mean couldn't stop anything in that game. They just gave up a ton of transition, just nothing going for them. And it is Will Malcolm's birthday, so happy birthday, Will Malcolm. But he, so the Warriors, like, I haven't really seen them dominate a good team yet, and I want to see that out of them. And they play Saskatchewan this weekend, so that'll be, I think, a pretty good test for them. Mm-hmm. But because I haven't really seen that out of them, I'm not going to put them at that spot. The Wings are letting teams hang around, so I'm not putting them there either, but they definitely could. So then it comes down to the Thunderbirds and the Bandits, and, you know, until I see Jameson back on the Thunderbirds, I'm going to put the Bandits up just because I want to see Jameson come out and fill in the role he needs to fill in to keep the Thunderbirds on this train. Mm-hmm. But until then, you know, Bandits have looked fantastic. I mean, they blew the doors off of Calgary in week one. And then mm-hmm. this past weekend, you know, they hung around, but then when they needed to, they closed it out. Got some stops, scored when they needed to. Tohoku looking fantastic. Mm-hmm. So that's what right now I'd say the Bandits are the best of this 2-0 team. I think that they're, they're 2-0. I'd say they're contenders, and I don't think that's necessarily a hot take.
No, I don't disagree with you. I still am going to go Thunderbirds as my top team. You know, I think, you know, again, the assumption that Jammer's going to be back, but you saw what they were able to do. They played, you know, the Rock and the Rush. You know, not easy teams sitting now 2-0, you know, without Jammer. You know, obviously they had reached Stutch before he went down to injury, but I still feel really confident as the Thunderbirds team, but I agree with you with the Bandits. And, you know, Connor Fields trade, that's been a revelation. He had a huge day, and it's kind of crazy to think, like, going in this season, you know, you kind of you didn't scoff at the move of them adding Connor Fields, but you're almost just like, oh, well, they have so many offensive weapons. Like, is he really going to put them, you know, over the top? You know, it's almost like him adding him to the Archers. Great move, had a great season, but you know, they already have a ton of offensive weapons. It's just another, you know, kind of, you know, firepower, some more firepower in their stable. But you know, he's, you know, really proven to be like one of the top offensive weapons on this team, you know, not just another one of the offensive weapons. So again, his presence is great. Dane Smith is continuing to be Dane Smith, you know, and the chemistry that, you know, these guys and Cloutier, Josh Byrne, I see Ian McKay back on the floor too after missing the first game. And Frazier, like those guys that they built on the chaos, like it's translating in this, you know, in the indoor game. You know, and we knew it would, but, you know, you're seeing them really just light it up on the score sheet. And Matt Vince is playing well in Cage. So overall, yeah, I like this Bandits team. I think the reason why I still put Thunderbirds is because I feel like the Bandits played a little bit less of a tough schedule than the Thunderbirds did. You know, Calgary obviously isn't anything to slouch at because they played the Rush really, really well and beat them. But the Nighthawks, I'm still a little uncertain about. It's tough to judge them. They're another team that, you know, I really don't know what to expect from them based on their first, you know, their first win against the Riptide and now, you know, a close loss to the Bandits. I think they're a better team, but, you know, who knows? It's still tough for me to tell. But those are our thoughts on these weekend games, the ones that we highlighted. What's your matchup of the week going into week three for the NLL?
So I like Wings at Rock. I also like Saskatchewan with Vancouver. Mm-hmm. I think that the Wings at the Rock definitely is like the clear cut. Like this is going to be a good game. Mm-hmm. I think Saskatchewan and Vancouver can be a good game and can be a really good kind of litmus test for the Warriors. Because, you know, they've got some good wins under their belt. Now, can they go out and beat Saskatchewan, who's, mm-hmm. you know, maybe not the superpower they were 2 years ago, three or four years mm-hmm. ago, but still a decent team and play the Thunderbirds pretty close. So that's, you know, Wings at Rock definitely be a good game, but don't sleep on the Warriors and the Rush.
Yeah, I agree. You know, TSN, a game of the week as well for Canadian fans. I think it's going to be a good test for this Warriors team. I'm still, you know, Alex Bukay has played phenomenal the past two games, but I'm still kind of like, you know, seeing if he's going to maybe come down to earth or if, you know, this is a new Alex Bukay that we're seeing, you know, not the ones that we've seen in past seasons. So yeah, definitely a good one on my radar, but you mentioned Wings Rock. That's mine right now. 'Cause I need to know, are the Wings legit? And that'll, you know, kind of be, you know, show itself against this good Rock team, especially a Rock team that can, you know, really score in transition, you know, with Latrell Harris, Challen Rogers, like, you know, even Tom Schreiber was getting involved in transition this last game. So it's going to be a good test for them. And this is the toughest goalie they've faced in Nick Rose, who's playing really, really well, despite the, you know, week two loss. So this is a game that I have circled. And, you know, Trevor Baptiste, you say what you will about faceoffs, you know, do they impact the NLL game as much as the field game? Not as much, but, you know, having Trevor Baptiste is always great, you know, for the Wings to get some, a few extra possessions. Now Rock might activate TD Erland. We're not sure if he is going to get activated for this game just yet, but, you know, that kind of neutralizes that advantage they have. So this is the game I'm looking forward to the most on. I need to see if the Wings are a legit contender or still have a little ways to go. And we'll hopefully find out in this Rock Wings game coming up this weekend. With that, my game picks are, I'm going Colorado to bounce back. I have San Diego winning. I'm going to have Vancouver over the Rush, Toronto, and then Albany in my game picks. What are your thoughts on this 5-game slate?
I mean, I matched you all the way except for the Vancouver Saskatchewan game. Like, I'm not saying Vancouver's a bad team, but, you know, it's like, I want them to win because I want to see, like, you know, I'm a Jags fan, so I want to see the bottom of the barrel teams rise up to the top. Mm-hmm. You know, not really happening with the Jags, but Vancouver perhaps. And so, you know, I think that Saskatchewan's games have been more telling. You know, they played the Thunderbirds really close. They played played Calgary really close. You know, Vancouver has played a Seals team that didn't play well, close, blew out a Panther City team that, you know, I think will be decent down the stretch, but maybe not so hot right now as they're working out kind of how they're playing together, you know? So wouldn't shock me to see Vancouver come out and beat the Rush, but also, you know, I think that the Rush can come out and win this game. And I think they're the better team. So that's, you know, pick them.
Yeah, no. And mostly in agreement with, you know, all that. Albany, I'm hoping, you know, we'll come out and get a win. That's going to be, you know, interesting game too, though, playing Rochester. So I think that's going to be another, you know, sign, or is this Albany team, you know, also kind of up there, cream of the crop, or are they, you know, kind of middle of the pack, you know, no pun intended, with the Wolfpack reference, but, yeah, those are our thoughts on these NLL games coming up. I want you guys to remind you guys to tune in to our PLT preview, on Twitter Spaces. We're doing that on Friday night. So definitely check that out. We appreciate Clark Peterson for hopping on the show, and talking with us. And, we look forward to another episode of PLT next week. So thank you guys for joining. Thank you, Sam, for joining, making your debut. Great job. And we appreciate you guys as listeners for tuning in to another episode of Pro Lacrosse Talk.